I lied before. I would have run. CG.
Chubbs! I called, waving him over. The power-on chime was oddly sweet. Little bells.
He just left it here? Chubbs asked, tapping his fingers against the desk. Is the wireless card still there?
It was, but Clancy had taken care to wipe everything else from the computer. Only the icon for the internet was left, sitting in the middle of the screen.
Why does the clock in the corner say 15?
Chubbs asked, sitting down in a chair. I leaned over to see what he was pointing at.
The battery life. We only had 15 minutes.
That asshole, I fumed. Chubbs shook his head.
It's better than nothing. As long as the connection holds, we can use it to try to figure out a way out of here. We can even look up Jack's father's new address.
And post your message to your parents, I said, feeling a frail wave of happiness cut through me.
It's okay. I'd rather use these 14 minutes to find Jack's dad, he said. I might even be able to put a call through to him if the computer has a microphone.
He didn't dare try to call his own parents. Seriously, I began. It'll take you 2 seconds to post the message. Do you remember it?
Enough to make it work, he said.
I moved around the room listlessly, listening to him type, taking in the room's stale smell. My feet drew me over to the side of Clancy's bed, where I finally stopped, my anger at him overwhelming even the anxiety I felt. The window was coated in soot and protested bitterly when I tried to throw it open. The flood of fresh air that rushed in made it worth the fight. I leaned forward, bracing my arms against the sill. The camp was spread out before me in piles of ash and scorched earth, but it was all too easy to imagine where the clusters of kids had once stood, waiting to get their food by the fire pit. When I closed my eyes, I could hear the laughter and radio drifting up to me, taste the spice of chili and wood smoke on the air. I saw Liam below, the firelight turning his hair pure gold as he bent his head in quiet conversation with the others. And when my eyes opened, I was no longer just imagining him. I tore out of the room, ignoring the way Chubbs' voice followed me. I stumbled down the stairs, trying to take too many at once, flew through the entryway and out the door that was barely hanging from its frame. He was down the trail, back toward the cabins, struggling to get around the maze of fallen trees and buildings. His battered face was twisted with grief and fear, and he could barely limp through the wreckage.
Lee!
The word exploded out of me. He dropped the charred wood from his hands and struggled over the tree, blindly fighting his way through its leaves and branches, seeing me, believing and not believing it all at once.
Oh my God!
I threw my arms around his neck and nearly took us both down.
Thank you, he was whispering. Thank you, thank you.
And then he was kissing my face, every inch of it he could find, wiping away the tears and soot, chanting my name. Liam wasn't the only one who escaped, but he was the only one who came back. He had relived the night for us as we sat in Clancy's office eating what food was left in the supply room. Chubbs had the laptop at his side, checking every few minutes for a message from his parents, or rechecking the address he had found for Jack's dad. When the fighting had broken out, it was enough of a surprise that most of the watch kids couldn't get to the cabins from the outer gates in time to make a real difference. The ones who were off duty came to our cabin and forced him.
Carried me is more like it, Liam said bitterly,
away, running for one of the hidden side trails that had been marked for this exact purpose. They moved until morning, not stopping until they reached that same stretch of highway that they had picked us up on.
There were maybe 20 of us at most, he said, gripping my hand, all in bad shape. Liv and Mike found a working car and piled the ones that were scary bad into the back to go find a hospital, but...
What about the rest of them? I asked.
They split.
Liam rubbed at his eyes and winced. The skin there was still tender, blooming to black.
And why didn't you? Chubbs demanded. What the hell is the matter with you that you'd come back here knowing that there could still be PSFs?
Liam only snorted.
You think that mattered to me for a second, when there was a chance the two of you were still here, too?
We didn't have time to waste. We all knew the PSFs well enough to know that there was a chance they would double back and check for survivors. The two of them went to work immediately in the supply closet, trying to figure out how much food we could carry with us. I tried to be useful, too, but I could feel my attention drifting upstairs, to Clancy's desk. I finally gave in to my restlessness and left the two of them locked in an argument over canned food. I made my way back upstairs, patting the inside pocket of Liam's jacket to make sure Jack's and Chubb's still damp letters were there. There were 2 minutes left of the laptop's battery. The power icon was flashing, warning that reserves were low. The screen dimmed and the lights in the keyboard switched off. I typed as fast as I could, searching the online white pages for Ruby Ann Daly, Virginia Beach. No results. I tried again, just with her name but no location. A listing did pop up, but it was for Salem. I hadn't lived there in close to a decade, but I recognized my parents' address when I saw it. 1 minute and 15 seconds. I looked in the website history for the site Chubbs had talked about, the one that let you make calls, and typed in the phone number. I lost 2 seconds with each ring. I don't think I wanted to talk to her so much as to hear her speak. Going to her wasn't an option for me anymore. There were more important things to take care of, but I needed to know that she was still out there, that there was one more person in the world who remembered me. It clicked. My heart jumped up into my throat, my fingers curling against the desk. My mother's voice. "Hello, you've reached the residence of Jacob, Susan, and Ruby Daly." I don't know why I started to cry then. Maybe I was exhausted. Maybe I was tired of how hard everything had become. I was happy that the three of them were together, that Mom and Dad had fixed their family and replaced one Ruby with another. The thing I'd realized most over the past few days was how important it was for us to take care of one another and stick together. And they were taking care of each other. Good. Good. But it didn't mean that I wasn't going to close my eyes and pretend, if only for a few minutes, that I was the Ruby who still lived on Millwood Drive. 30. Hours later, when it was just the three of us back on the road, we finally had a chance to tell Liam exactly what had happened to us the night before. "Thank God Chubbs found you," Liam said, shaking his head. "You knew him better than any of us, and you still went." "I really thought I could control him," I said, leaning my forehead against the cool window. "I'm an idiot." "Yes, you are," Chubbs agreed. "But you're our idiot, so be more careful next time." "Co-signed," Liam said, hooking his fingers over mine on top of the armrest. We'd found the car abandoned alongside a road a few miles west of East River, and picked it only because it still had a quarter tank of gas. Driving in this car was nothing like driving in Betty. Chubb's long legs dug into the back of my seat, and the car smelled like old Chinese food. Still, it was running. After a while, it would become ours.
"There's another one," Chubb said, tapping on his window.
I opened my eyes and craned my neck back, catching a quick look at the white pole. On top of it was a white box, and on top of that was a small antenna. Cameras everywhere.
"Maybe we should get off the highway," Liam suggested. "No," Chubb said. "We've seen 2 whole cars since we got on the 64, and it'll take us twice as long to get to Annandale if we get off again. They'll be watching for Betty anyway, not this car."
Liam and I shared a look. "Tell me again what your mom's message said."
"She said to make a reservation at my aunt's restaurant and wait for them in the kitchen," Chubb said. "I did that from East River, so we should be set to meet them there tonight. My aunt will probably even feed us."
"Let's drop you off first, then," Liam said.
"No," Chubb said. "I want to deliver Jack's letter."
"Chubbs..."
"Don't Chubbs me," he snapped. "I owe Jack a lot. I want to do this."
The address for Jack's father was a Days Inn motel, far away from Annandale's neighborhoods of sprawling homes. Liam seemed to think that the motel had been converted to a temporary housing complex for the workers rebuilding D.C., but there was no way to prove his theory until a rickety old bus pulled up alongside our car in the parking lot
and unloaded a dozen dust-covered men, clutching neon vests and hard hats. "Room 103, Liam said, leaning over the steering wheel. He squinted with his good eye. "The guy in the red shirt. Yeah, that's him. Jack looked a lot like him." The man was short and square, with a graying mustache and a wide nose. Chubbs reached between us and plucked the wrinkled letter out of my hand. "Slow down, Turbo," Liam said, clicking the car locks on. "We haven't even checked to make sure he's not being watched." "We've been out here for almost an hour. Do you see anyone?" "The only other cars in the parking lot are empty. We lay low, like you wanted, and it worked."
He reached over and pulled the lock up manually. Liam stared at him for a moment before relenting.
"All right. Just be careful, will you?"
We watched him scurry across the parking lot, glancing around, making sure there really was no one out watching room 103. He tossed a "told you so" look over his shoulder.
"Nice," Liam said. "Real nice."
I reached over and rubbed his shoulder. "You know you'll miss him."
"It's insane, isn't it?" he said with a light laugh. "What am I going to do without him telling me how dangerous it is to open canned food the wrong way?"
Liam waited until Chubbs had raised his hand and knocked before unbuckling his seatbelt to lean over and give me a light kiss.
"What was that for?" I said, laughing. "To get your mind on the right track," he said. "After we take him home, we have to figure out how to find Zoo and the others before the PSFs do."
"What if..." The door to room 103 cracked open, and the face of Mr. Fields appeared, tired and suspicious. Chubbs lifted the wrinkled letter and extended it out to him. I wish Chubbs had turned at an angle so we could have made out what he was saying. The man's face flushed crimson, so dark that it matched his work shirt. He yelled something, loud enough that his next-door neighbors opened their curtains to see what was happening.
"This is bad," Liam said, unlocking his door. "I knew I should have had him practice with me first."
The door shut in Chubbs' face, only to open again all the way. I saw a flash of silver, saw Chubbs raise his hands and take a step back. The gunshot tore through the sunset, and by the time I screamed, Chubbs was already on the ground. We ran toward the room, screaming for him. All the complex's residents were standing outside now, mostly men, some women. Their faces were monstrous blurs. Jack's father raised his shaking gun toward us, but Liam threw him back into his room and pulled the door shut with a sweep of his hand. My knees slid across the loose asphalt as I dropped down beside Chubbs. His eyes were open, staring at me, blinking. Alive. He tried to tell me something, but I couldn't hear over the screaming from inside 103.
"Fucking freaks, get out of here, you goddamn freaks!"
Bright red blood bubbled up from just below Chubbs' right shoulder, spreading out over his shirt with hundreds of gliding fingers. I couldn't do anything at first. It didn't look real. Liam diving for the man's gun, pointing it at 104 and 105, not real.
"It's okay," someone said behind us.
Liam whirled around, his finger on the trigger, his face set in stone. The man raised his hands. He was holding a small phone.
"I'm just calling 911. It's okay. We'll get him help."
"Don't let them call," Chubbs gasped. "Don't let them take me."
He choked on the words.
"I need to go home."
Liam looked back over his shoulder.
"Grab his legs, Ruby."
"Don't move him,"
the man from 104 said.
"You're not supposed to move him."
Jack's father appeared behind us again, but the man with the cell phone tackled him back into the room and kicked the door shut behind him.
"Grab him,"
Liam said, tucking the gun into the waistband of his jeans. I slipped my arms under Chubbs, carrying him the same way he had carried me. One of the other men stepped forward, maybe to stop us, maybe to help.
"Don't touch him!"
I screamed. They backed off, but only just. Chubbs pressed his own hands against the wound, his eyes wide and unblinking. Liam took his legs, and together we carried him. The men called after us, telling us the ambulance would be there any minute. The ambulance, along with every PSF. The soldiers wouldn't save him. They wouldn't. They'd rather see a freak kid die.
"Don't let them take me," Chubbs squeezed out. "Keep my legs below my chest, Lee. Don't lift them so high. Not for chest wounds. Breathing, difficult.
It wasn't the babbling that sent the spikes of fear straight into my heart, but the unending pulse of blood leaking out from behind his hands. He was shaking, but not crying.
Don't let them take me.
I climbed into the back seat first, pulling Chubbs in behind me. His blood soaked through the front of my shirt, burning against my skin.
Keep pressure on it, Chubbs told me. Harder. Ruby, harder. I'm going to try to hold it in with
his abilities, I think. The blood did seem to slow somewhat when his hand covered it again, but how long could that actually last? My hands covered his, shaking so hard they probably did more harm than good.
God, I was saying. Oh, my God, don't close your eyes. Talk to me. Keep talking to me. Tell me what to do.
The car squealed as we turned out of the parking lot. Liam hit the gas as hard as he could, slamming his palms down against the steering wheel.
Shit! 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 Take me home, Chubbs begged. Ruby, make him take me home.
You're going... You'll be fine, I told him, leaning over so he could see my eyes.
My dad.
No. Lee, hospital. I wasn't speaking in sentences, and Chubbs wasn't either. Not anymore. He made a sound like he was choking on his own tongue. When the glimpses came, they were washed in the same bright red as his blood. A man sitting in a large armchair reading, a beautiful woman leaning across a kitchen table, a cross-stitch pattern, an emergency room sign. The black at the edge of my vision was curling up. Someone had taken a knife and driven it straight down into my brain.
Alexandria is a half hour away, Liam shouted, turning back over his shoulder. I'm not taking you there. Fairfax. Hospital.
Chubbs wheezed out.
My dad. Tell them to page dad.
Where is it? Liam demanded. He looked at me, but I had no idea either. It occurred to me then that there was a chance we would be driving around so long that Chubbs would die. He would bleed out right here, right now, in my lap, after everything. Liam whipped the car around so hard I had to brace Chubbs and me from flying off the seat. I bit my tongue in an effort to keep from screaming again.
Keep talking to him, Liam said. Chubbs! Charles!
I don't know when and where he had lost his glasses. His eyes were red at the edges, staring up at my face. I tried to hold his gaze for as long as I could, but he was trying to hand me something. Chubbs lifted his hand from where it had fallen across his stomach. Jack's letter. Its edges soaked in wet, sticky blood, but open, waiting to be read. The handwriting was small and cramped. Each letter had a ghostly halo around it from the time it had spent submerged with the two of us in the lake, and some were gone completely. Dear Dad, when you sent me to school that morning, I thought you loved me, but now I see you for what you are. You called me a monster and a freak, but you're the one that raised me.
Tell him to read.
Chubbs licked his lips. I had to lean down to hear his voice over the wind outside.
Tell Lee to read my letter. I wrote it. It was for him.
Charles, I said.
Promise.
Whatever lodged itself in my throat made it impossible to speak. I nodded. A rush of blood bubbled up under our hands, coming faster than before.
Where is it?
Liam was shouting.
Chubbs, where is the hospital? You have to tell me where it is.
The car began to quiver, then howl, sounding more beast than machine. Liam hit a pothole in the road that sent the front hood flying up, along with a cloud of gray-blue smoke. We got another 10, maybe 20 feet before the car jerked to a dead stop. I looked up, meeting his gaze.
I can fix it, Liam swore, his voice breaking. I can fix it. Just keep him talking, okay? I can fix this. I can.
I waited until I heard the door slam behind him before I closed my eyes. Chubbs had gone so still, so pale, and no amount of shaking or yelling would bring him back out of it. I felt his blood leak past my hands, scarlet under the overcast sky, and I thought about what he had said the night Zoo left us.
It's over. It's all over.
And it was. The unnatural calm that settled over me told me as much. All along, I'd been fighting. I'd been fighting the moment I left Thurmond, struggling against the restraints everyone wanted to wrap around me, kicking and clawing against the inevitable. But I was tired now. So tired. I couldn't deny what a part of me had known from the moment the PSFs had burned my world down. What a part of me had known all along. What had Miss Finch said all those years ago? That there were no do-overs, no comebacks? That once someone was gone, they were gone forever. Dead flowers didn't bloom, and they didn't grow. A dead Chubbs wouldn't smile, spout off rambling sentences, wouldn't pout, wouldn't laugh. A dead Chubbs was unimaginable. I reached into the pocket of Liam's jacket and pushed the panic button. 20 seconds clicked by, each one feeling longer than the last. It gave a little vibration, a little acknowledgement, and I released it. Outside, Liam was banging metal against metal, growing more helpless and angry by the second. I wanted to call him back to us, to have him next to Chubbs, because I was sure this was it. I was sure he was going to die right there in my arms less than 24 hours after he had saved me, and I couldn't do anything for him other than hold him. "Do not die," I whispered. "You cannot die. You have to take calculus and go to football games and go to prom and apply to colleges, and you absolutely cannot die. You can't. You can't." I detached completely. A familiar numbness took hold of my entire body. I was vaguely aware of Liam shouting something outside. My arms tightened around Chubb's chest. I heard feet shuffling against the loose asphalt outside. All I could smell was smoke and blood. All I could hear was my own heartbeat. That's when the door across from me opened and Kate's face appeared. And that's when I began to cry. Really cry. "Oh, Ruby," she said, anguished. "Ruby. Please help him," I sobbed. "Please." 2 pairs of hands reached in to lift me out. My arms were still wrapped around Chubbs. I couldn't move my hands. There was so much blood. I kicked and butted against whoever was trying to pull us apart. "Ruby, sweetheart," Kate said suddenly next to me. "Ruby, you have to let go now." I had made a mistake. This was a mistake. I never should have called them. A terrible noise filled the air, and it wasn't until Liam was there holding me back, his arms around my shoulders, that I realized I had been screaming the entire time. There were 3 cars surrounding our smoking, useless hunk of metal, all SUVs. "If you get him help, we'll go with you," I heard Liam tell Kate. "We'll go with you. We'll do whatever you want." "No," I cried. "No." Liam was holding me steady, but I felt the way his arms shook. We watched them load Chubb's still form into the back of one of the SUVs, and the door had barely shut before it tore off down the highway. Chubb's blood was still warm on my skin, cooling every second, and it made me want to crawl out of it. "Please," Liam said, his voice breaking. "Calm down. You have to calm down. I've got you. I'm right here." There was a pinch on the back of my neck, there and gone, faster than taking a breath. All at once, I felt my muscles relax. I was being dragged forward on limp legs, the image of the nearest white SUV swimming in and out of focus. "Lee," I wanted to say, but my tongue was too heavy. Someone slid a dark hood over my face, and I was being lifted up, up into the air, like my father used to do when I was just a kid, when I thought I could grow up and fly. And then the real darkness came. 31. It was the cold water that woke me more than the woman's soft voice. "You're all right," she was saying. "Ruby, you're gonna be fine." I'm not sure who she thought she was fooling with her sweet little BS, but it wasn't me. The smell of rosemary was back, filling my nose with a memory that felt both ancient and new. Which was it? When I felt the press of her hand against mine, I forced my eyes open, blinking against the sunlight. Kate's face swam in and out of my vision. She stood and crossed the room, drawing the gauzy curtains shut. It helped somewhat, but I was still having trouble fixing my sight on any one thing. It was glancing off bright, shiny surfaces. A white dresser, pale purple wallpaper, a flashing alarm clock, a mirror on the opposite wall, and our reflections there.
"Is this real?"
I whispered. Kate sat at the edge of my bed, the exact same way she had at Thurmond, only now she wasn't smiling. Behind her, Martin leaned against the wall in camo pants and boots. He looked like a completely different person to me. I hadn't fully recognized him at first glance. The roundness in his face had thinned out, sinking his eyes further into his skull. Someone had been dumb enough to give him a gun. "We're in a safe house outside of Maryland," she said.
"Lee?"
"Safe here, too." "Not safe," I thought. "Never safe with you." I felt the urge to run rise up deep from my bones. It was instinct now. Exhaustion and pain had stripped every other sensation away from me. My eyes scanned the room, two windows, the only other exit aside from the door. I could break the glass. I forced Kate back with a single brush of my mind, get Liam, and we could be gone before anyone noticed. It could work.
"Don't even try,"
Kate said, following my eyes. She slipped a small silver object from the back pocket of her jeans and held it out to me, the rough pattern of the speaker face up. "Even if you could get past me, every single one of the agents downstairs is carrying one of these on them. Judging by your last hit of calm control, you're not going to be of much use to Liam when they take him out and shoot him for your insubordination." I jerked away. "They wouldn't." But I saw the truth of it in her eyes. They would. They risked everything to break me out of Thurmond. They fought off skip tracers to get me back. I had already seen in Rob's mind that, despite what they claimed their mission was, they didn't have any qualms about offing a few kids if it meant getting the ones they wanted.
"How could you even think about it?" Martin hissed. "Do you know how much time she wasted looking for you?"
Kate waved him off. When she leaned toward me again, I saw there were splatters of blood across the front of her shirt. Dark. Dried. The memory came into painfully sharp focus.
"Chubbs. What happened to Chubbs?"
Kate looked down at her hands and something in me clenched.
"Honestly," she said, "I'm not sure. We haven't been able to contact the group of agents that took him, but I know they reached the hospital."
Kate reached for my hands, but I wouldn't let her take them. The thought turned my stomach.
"He's safe. They'll make sure he's taken care of."
"You don't know that," I said. "You said it yourself."
"But I believe it," Kate said.
I wanted to tell her that her beliefs weren't worth a damn thing when she spoke again. "I've spent the last month looking for you. I stayed in this area hoping you'd eventually show up.
But Ruby, where were you? Where did you go? You look like...
"East River," I said. Kate sucked in a sharp breath. So the League had heard about what happened.
"Oh, that's perfect," Martin said, pushing himself up off the wall.
He slid the strap of his rifle over his shoulder and stalked toward me.
"Sitting around on your ass for weeks doing nothing? Figures. I've been actually making a difference. I've been part of something."
He made as if to touch my leg, but I grabbed his wrist tight in my hand. I wanted to see what he had gone through for myself. The training, the screaming instructors. I latched on to the strongest of his memories and spread it open in my mind. I wanted to glimpse our future. Martin's memory bubbled up like hot tar, forming and shaping itself until I was standing where he had stood. The package that had been in his hands was now heavy in mine. I felt the weight of it cramp my fingers, but my eyes were focused only on the climbing numbers on the elevator's display. 11, 12, 13. The bell dinged as it passed each floor, heading to 17. I cast a sly look to the girl standing next to me, dressed in a skirt suit, her young face caked with enough makeup to age her well beyond her years. She clutched her leather tote bag to her side like a shield, and it was only when she released it that I noticed her hands were shaking. I was wearing a FedEx uniform. I could see myself through Martin's eyes, reflected in the elevator's silver doors as they slid open. We were in an office building of some kind. It was dark out, but there were still men and women working, tucked away in their cubicles, their eyes glued to their computer screens. I didn't stop, though, and neither did the girl at my side. Her face had broken out in a sweat, heavy enough to smear her makeup, and I felt a stab of irritation go through me at the sight of it. The largest office was located at the far back corner of the building, and that was where I was headed. The girl all but let out a sigh as I left her by the drinking fountains. She was there for backup. This was my mission. The door to the office was closed, but I could see someone's shape behind the frosted glass. He's still here. And so, thankfully, was his executive assistant. She looked confused at the sight of the package, but all it took was a single stroke at the back of her hand. Her eyes went glassy, unfocused, and I knew I had her. The elderly woman got up from her chair and turned toward the office door. I left the package right on her desk. Free of that weight, I hustled back through the maze of cubicles, catching the eye of the girl by the fountain. When I jerked my head toward the elevators, she followed, looking back and forth between the elevator bank and the office floor, her lip caught between her teeth. She didn't do anything stupid until we were outside, though. I jogged down the steps, heading for the waiting FedEx van and the dark-haired man sitting in the driver's seat. I was already at the door when I realized she wasn't behind me. The girl was frozen at the top of the marble steps, her eyes wide and her face as pale as the stone beneath her feet. She was going to run back into the building to warn them about the explosive. To warn them. Weak. The words shot through my mind, as crisp as if they had been drilled there. Ditch and die. Double-cross the league and die. I took the handgun from under my seat and leaned out the open window, but I never got a shot off. Upstairs, high on the 17th floor of the building, an explosion blew out a shower of glass and concrete, and she had disappeared under their weight. Martin's hand stayed at my side, and he stopped moving. This is what it means to be one of them, I thought. This is what they will turn us into. I had slipped into his mind to confirm my suspicions, but even I was surprised at how easy it had been. Weeks ago, when we first got out, I hadn't been able to fend him off. Now all he had to do was brush by me, and I overpowered him. With a single touch. Clancy had taught me well. I looked at Martin again, feeling a strange sort of pity for him. Not because of what I was about to do or the way I would be using him, but because he thought he knew what it meant to be powerful and in control. He honestly still thought he was stronger than me. I put a finger on the back of his hand. Just one. "What's your name?" I asked him. The reaction from him was priceless. There wasn't an ounce of color left in his cheeks, and his lips began to smack against one another, trying to form the word, trying to call up a memory that was no longer there. "Where are you from?" I could see the panic now. It caused his eyes to bulge, but I still wasn't finished. "Do you know where you are now?" I almost felt guilty. Almost. When I saw the moisture began to gather at the corner of his eyes. But I also remembered how helpless and afraid he had made me feel, and I regretted not having done more. A plan was forming at the back of my mind, and it was almost too terrible to acknowledge as my own. "I don't," he gasped the words out. "I don't." "Then maybe you should leave," I said in a cold voice. I barely had to push the image of him doing it. He bolted from the room, slamming the door behind him, running from the scary monster. Kate stared after him, an unreadable expression on her face. "Impressive." "I thought he could do with an attitude adjustment," I said. I kept my voice cold and flat, just the way I thought she'd want it. I had seen enough to know the viciousness these people demanded, and I needed them to want me. Since it seems we'll be spending a lot of time together now. Her pale blonde hair fell over her shoulders as she bowed her head, but Kate didn't deny it. We were trapped here. She had accepted Liam's deal. "I guess it was never really a choice to begin with," I continued. "Eventually you were going to have to bring me in." "You are a valuable asset to the Resistance." Kate lifted her hand toward me, only to drop it before it could touch my face. smart lady. She knew what I could do. I hoped you would come to see that on your own terms. What about Lee?
He's a security risk now that he's seen this safe house and the agents here.
He's safer with us, Ruby. The president wants him dead. I'm sure he'd come to see that. Eventually.
My hands twisted against the pale bedsheets.
A weapon.
Liam, as a weapon? Liam, who could barely lose his temper without feeling guilty. He had fought so hard to escape this violence, and I'd turned him right back toward it. They'd put their hands on him and press him into their mold, and he'd come out the other end of it as the same dark creature he had struggled to avoid becoming.
I was breathing hard now, though inwardly I was as calm as the waters on East River's lake. All at once, the final piece clicked into place, and I knew what I was going to do.
Okay, I said. I'll stay, and I won't fight you or manipulate you. But if you want me to do as you say, if you want to use my abilities or do testing on me, I have one condition. You have to let Lee go.
Ruby, she began, shaking her head, it's too dangerous for everyone involved.
He's a blue. You don't need him. He won't ever be a fighter, not like you want.
And if he stays here, you will kill him. You will kill every good part of him.
I can do so much now, I told her, but you won't see another hint of it until you let him go, until you swear you will never chase him down.
Kate watched me for a moment, a hand pressed to her mouth. I could see the indecision in her face. I had used Martin to show her exactly what I could offer them, and he, apparently, had already proven to them how valuable an orange could be. These were not, however, the terms she would have chosen.
All right, she said finally. All right. He can go.
How do I know you'll keep your promise? I asked. Kate stood and reached again into her pocket. The silver calm control device, the only thing keeping me out of her head, was still warm when she pressed it into my palm. My fingers closed around hers.
So help me God, I said slowly, clearly, when Kate looked up at me. If you go back on your word, I will tear you apart, and I won't stop, not ever, until I've destroyed your life and the lives of every single person in this organization. Believe me, you may not always keep your promises, but I do.
She nodded at me once, and there was something almost like pride in her eyes.
Understood, Kate said.
And we did. They kept Liam in the bedroom at the other end of the hall, in a room painted a soft blue, the kind of color you'd only find in the sky just before sunrise, maybe. It might have been a nursery once. There were clouds painted on the ceiling, and the few pieces of furniture left seemed too small for an average adult. Liam sat on the tiny bed with his back to me. At first, as I shut the door behind me, I thought he was staring out the window. As I came closer, I saw he was actually fixated on the wrinkled sheet of paper in his hand. The bed dipped as I crawled across it, wrapping my arms around his chest from behind. I pressed my cheek against his, letting my hands wander until they found his steady heartbeat. He shut his eyes and leaned back.
"What are you looking at?" I whispered.
He handed me the paper wordlessly as I moved to sit beside him. Jack Field's letter.
You were right, Liam said after a moment. You were so right. We should have read it. We would have known not to bother.
It was the dead way he spoke, so flat, so coated with grief, that made me crumple the letter and throw it across the room. He only shook his head, pressing a hand over his eyes. I fumbled with the inside pocket of his jacket, where I had stashed Chubb's letter all those days ago. Liam watched me pull it out and sagged beside me.
He told me he didn't write it for them, I said. He wrote it for you. He wanted you to read it.
I don't want to.
Yes, you do, because when you get out of here, you'll want something to say when you see him again.
Ruby! Now he sounded angry. His arm dropped from around my shoulders and he stood up.
Do you really think that if he lives, they're going to let us see him? Do you think they're even going to let us stay together? That's not how these people work. They're going to control our every move, right down to who we see and what we eat. Trust me, it'll be some precious piece of luck if we even find out if he's alive, never mind if they've brought him in for training.
Liam paced the room once, twice, three times, and it felt like an hour had passed before I worked up the nerve to open Chubb's letter myself. The room was silent for a long time.
What? Liam asked finally. His voice was laced with fear. What does it say?
It was blank. There was nothing written on the sheet of paper aside from Chubb's parents' name and their address, and there never had been. Not a single drop of ink.
I don't understand, I said, passing it to him. That couldn't have been right. Maybe he had lost the original letter or was carrying the real one?
When I looked up again, Liam was crying, one hand destroying the letter in his fist, the other pressed against his eyes. And then I realized I already knew the answer. Chubbs hadn't written anything because he didn't think he had to. He thought he was going to be able to tell his parents everything he wanted to say in person. He believed he was going to get home. Liam's knees seemed to buckle out from under him as he sat back down on the bed. His forehead came down to rest against my shoulder, and I wrapped both arms around him. He did believe you, I wanted to say. All along, he believed you. I felt so much older then. Not 16, not 60, not even 100, but 1,000 years old. Older, but not brittle. I felt like one of the oak trees that grew along the highway overlooking the Shenandoah Valley, with deep roots and a strong core. He gets to go, I thought. He gets to go home. For a long time, I did nothing but hold on to him. I wanted to memorize the way his hair curled at the ends, the scar at the edge of his lips. I had never felt time's sting as sharply as I did then. Why did it only ever seem to freeze or move forward at a barreling speed?
The crazy thing is, I had all of these plans, he whispered. What we were going to do, all the places I was going to take you. I really wanted you to meet Harry.
The window breathed in afternoon light. I felt his hand trail down the length of my arm.
We'll be okay, Liam said. We just can't let them separate us.
They won't, I whispered. I was thinking. I know this is going to sound so corny, but if there's one good thing that came out of all this, it was that I got to meet you. I would go through it all again. Tears pricked my eyes. I would, as long as it meant I'd met you.
You really think that?
Liam sat up and pressed his lips against my hair.
'Cause frankly, the way I see it, you and me, inevitable. Let's say we didn't get stuck in those god-awful camps. No, just listen. I'm going to tell you the amazing story of us.
Liam cleared his throat again and turned to fully face me.
So, it's the summer, and you're in Salem suffering through another boring hot July and working part-time at an ice cream parlor. Naturally, you're completely oblivious to the fact that all of the boys from your high school who visit daily are more interested in you than the 31 flavors. You're focused on school and all your dozens of clubs because you want to go to a good college and save the world. And just when you think you're going to die if you have to take another practice SAT, your dad asks if you want to go visit your grandmother in Virginia Beach.
Yeah? I leaned my forehead against his chest. What about you?
Me? Liam said, tucking a strand of hair behind my ear. I'm in Wilmington, suffering through another boring hot summer, working one last time in Harry's repair shop before going off to some fancy university, where, I might add, my roommate will be a stuck-up know-it-all with a heart of gold named Charles Carrington Meriwether IV, but he's not part of this story, not yet.
His fingers curled around my hip, and I could feel him trembling, even as his voice was steady.
To celebrate, Mom decides to take us up to Virginia Beach for a week. We're only there for a day when I start catching glimpses of this girl with dark hair walking around town, her nose stuck in a book, earbuds in, and blasting music. But no matter how hard I try, I never get to talk to her. Then, as our friend Fate would have it, on our very last day at the beach, I spot her. You. I'm in the middle of playing a volleyball game with Harry, but it feels like everyone else disappears. You're walking toward me, big sunglasses on, wearing this light green dress, and I somehow know that it matches your eyes. And then, because let's face it, I'm basically an Olympic god when it comes to sports, I manage to volley the ball right into your face. Ouch, I said with a light laugh. Sounds painful. Well, you can probably guess how I'd react to that situation. I offer to carry you to the lifeguard station, but you look like you want to murder me at just the suggestion. Eventually, thanks to my sparkling charm and wit, and because I'm so pathetic you take pity on me, you let me buy you ice cream. And then you start telling me how you work in an ice cream shop in Salem, and how frustrated you feel that you still have 2 years before college, and somehow, I get your email or screen name or maybe, if I'm really lucky, your phone number. Then we talk. I go to college and you go back to Salem, but we talk all the time about everything. And sometimes we do that stupid thing where we run out of things to say and just stop talking and listen to one another breathing until one of us falls asleep. And Chubbs makes fun of you for it, I added. Oh, ruthlessly, he agreed. And your dad hates me because he thinks I'm corrupting his beautiful, sweet daughter, but still lets me visit from time to time. That's when you tell me about tutoring a girl named Suzume, who lives a few cities away. But who's the coolest little girl on the planet? I managed to squeeze out. Yup, Liam said. Wanna try for the ending? By then, I couldn't help myself. I brought both hands up to my face, pressing my fingers against my eyes. I had to do it now or I never would. We couldn't hide up here forever. They could change their mind about his leaving as quickly as they had the first time. I sat up and wiped the tears off my face, gritting my teeth. Liam pushed himself up so that he was sitting beside me on the edge of the bed, a concerned look on his face. For a moment, I was terrified that he knew what I was about to do. He tilted his head to the side, a small smile turning up the corner of his lips. I tried to smile back, but inside I was breaking apart. What? When they brought us to the camps, they took everything. They stripped away our friends and family, took our clothes, took our future. The only thing we got to keep were our memories, and now I was about to take those from him too. Close your eyes, I whispered. I'm going to finish the story. I felt the trickle at the back of my mind and let it turn into a roar. And when I kissed him, when my lips pressed against his one last time, slipping inside of his mind was as easy as taking his hand had been. I felt him jerk back, heard him say my name in alarm, but I didn't let him get away. I pulled myself from his mind day by day, piece by piece, memory by memory, until there was nothing of Ruby left to weigh him down or keep him bound to my side. It was a strange, unwinding sensation, one I had never felt before, or maybe one I never recognized until that moment. The problem of Chubbs rose in the back of my mind, and I had a split second to make a decision. If he was alive, and he had to be, there was no alternative for me. The League would bring him in. But if Liam knew that, he'd come back to find a way to get him out, and the deal would be for nothing. I would take care of Chubbs. I would be the one to help him give the League the slip. There was no reason why Liam couldn't think that his friend had made it home to his parents, no reason he needed another distraction from getting home himself. It was a simple adjustment, a quick patch over an ugly memory. And then I was out of air and out of time. The door behind me opened, and I pulled away from Liam. He stayed bored stiff, his hands resting on his knees, his eyes shut tight.
Kate looked back and forth between us, her brows drawing together. I stood and moved to her side. A moment later, Liam's bright blue eyes opened, and he was seeing me. He just wasn't seeing Ruby.
"What happened?"
he asked, looking between Kate and me. He reached up to touch his face, which was still swollen and battered. "You had a car accident," I said. "The League picked you up." Kate stiffened beside me. I caught the sudden comprehension fall over her features out of the corner of my eye.
"The League,"
he repeated, his eyes narrowing.
"Yes, but if you feel well enough, you can go," Kate said when she recovered. "Your brother asked us to give you some money for a bus ticket."
"I bet he did," Liam grumbled as he searched the ground for his shoes. "Why can't I remember the accident?"
I'm not sure Kate realized how plainly she was wearing the shock on her face. Her hand floated up toward my shoulder, to steady me or herself, I wasn't sure, but I stepped away.
"Does your head still hurt?" I managed to choke out. I was still wearing his jacket. I couldn't bring myself to take it off.
"You hit it pretty hard."
"A little," he admitted. I didn't like the way he was looking at me, his brows drawn together in concentration.
"And the League is just letting me go."
Kate nodded and threw him an envelope. Liam threw it right back at her.
"I don't want your money."
"The procedure to contact your parents is also in here," she said.
"Don't want it?" he said. "Don't need it."
"What am I supposed to tell Cole?" Liam drew himself up on unsteady legs.
"Tell him to come home, and then we can talk."
He turned to me.
"What about you? Are you really one of them? You look like you have a lot more sense than that."
Wordlessly, I took the envelope from Kate. When I pressed it into his hand, he didn't toss it back at me.
"You'd better get going." "I'm not going to thank you," he told us. "I didn't ask for your help."
Kate led him out into the hall.
"You didn't have to, and you never need to."
He started down the stairs.
"Hey,"
I called. Liam stopped, turning back up to look at me.
"Be careful."
His blue eyes flicked back and forth between Kate and me.
"You too, darling."
I watched him go from the window overlooking the street, following his familiar shape as he stepped outside and closed the door behind him. No car, no one to watch over, no one to help. He was completely free. And he looked happy, sure of himself at least. His feet instinctively knew what direction home was. Now there was nothing left to keep him from getting there. Liam passed through the white fence surrounding the house and stepped onto the sidewalk. He flipped the sweatshirt hood up over his head and glanced both ways before jogging across the street. I watched him grow smaller and smaller with each step. "All the world will be your enemy, Prince with a thousand enemies," I thought. "And whenever they catch you, they will kill you. But first they must catch you, Digger, Listener, Runner, Prince with a swift warning. Be cunning and full of tricks, and your people shall never be destroyed." Kate came up behind me, stroking a hand through my hair.
"You'll be happy with us," she said. "I'll take care of you."
I drew the gauzy curtains shut, my fingers sliding over their silky surface. I watched her for a moment, searching for the tell that would reveal her lie. I wondered if she still thought I was the girl she had carried out of Thurmond, who had cried the first time she'd seen the stars. Because she didn't know that there were two of me now, split between everything I had wanted and everything I would now have to be. One of me, the hardest, angriest part, would stay with these monsters and slowly find herself twisting into their shape. But there was another, secret Ruby. This one was as thin as a wisp of air, and had struggled for so long just to be. This was the one that Liam carried with him, without knowing. The one that would ride in his back pocket, whisper words of encouragement, tell him that he was born to chase the light. For the first time in months, I heard Sam's voice whisper in my ear, "Don't be scared. Don't let them see. I turned from the window, and I didn't look back. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Darkest Minds by Alexandra Bracken. Copyright 2012 by Alexandra Bracken. Performed by Amy McFadden. Directed by Max Bloomquist. Engineered by Mitch Anderson. Performance copyright 2013 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.